It's Power Hour LSU.
Freaking go, PHL Nation. We're going to start off with an SEC Power Rankings. This is via Michael W. Bratton. We'll have our first edition of SEC Power Rankings on Thursday. It'll be the full list, but I am shocked, befuddled, bamboozled that he has LSU this low at number 7. That's normally a really good number in the grand scheme of LSU lore, but in this case, remember, you are not going to make a 12-team college football playoff in a 9-game conference schedule unless you are in this top 4. But the big takeaway that you should have from looking at this power ranking is that LSU has to play school number 8. LSU has to play school number 6. That is Alabama and Texas A&M. LSU has to play school number 5 in Tennessee. LSU has to play school number 4 in Texas, and LSU has to play school number 2 in Ole Miss. Now, I do think Ole Miss is drastically overrated in his power rankings here, but at the same time, I am still of the belief that LSU is a school. When you look at how they have built this team, how much better they're going to be on the front lines on both sides of the football, I do think LSU, to me, is number 3 in my SEC power rankings. So once again, on Thursday for the live stream, I'll have my full rankings out. But for me, Texas is number 1. You add the best player in the college football transfer portal at a huge position of need at Texas, which was wide receiver. And then you put Ryan Wingo next to him. And I'm talking about Cam Coleman. And you take a look at what Arch Manning did towards the end of the year. LSU is a step behind Texas right now that was able to also hold on to Colin Simmons. And obviously, you take a look at Texas, their secondary, always good. Will Muschamp coming in. I am still a little shocked that they got rid of Pete Kwiatkowski. But obviously, Steve Sarkisian felt really strongly about Will, and that defense next year should be pretty good for Texas. And then, to me, the number 2 team has to be Georgia. You return your quarterback. You were the SEC champion while also having one of the younger teams in college football. Out of all the teams in the college football playoff last year, Georgia was the one built with the fewest amount of transfers. So that lets you know that Georgia still is able to develop. They're still able to recruit at an extremely high level. You would hope Gunnar Stockton takes a step forward in the right direction. You do lose some really nice glue guys, a guy like Oscar Delp and so on, but those are replaceable assets. Georgia, to me, is the number 2 team in the SEC behind Texas. I do have LSU number 3. And if LSU finishes number 3 in this power ranking next year, this will be a team that makes the college football playoff. And once again, this is just one man's power rankings. There have been all kinds of power rankings out there. I wanted to put this out there, though, because with this one in Michael W. Bratton, this is the lowest I have seen LSU.
as we say hi to LA Mom, Tony, Mike. Good to see each and every one of you. And we move along here. You look at the right side. This is where it gets interesting for LSU. Let's just say Michael W. Braden is totally right with these SEC power rankings. He didn't miss on a single school. Well, you look and see that LSU plays Kentucky next year. LSU plays Auburn. LSU plays Arkansas. So you do get some of the bottom tier teams. You get number 12, you get number 13, you get number 15, and you get number 16. That's obviously really good. Now you get a little unlucky that the 2 years you get Vanderbilt on the schedule, they have Diego Pavia. We're able to beat him the first time, but then the second time around, you get it. Vanderbilt breaking in Jared Curtis as their starter next year, more than likely the can't-miss five-star recruit from Nashville that they were able to rip away from the Georgia Bulldogs. So it's very interesting. I do think LSU, though, I am a believer in this roster. Now, this is where I love to discuss philosophy. So I did a radio hit in, I believe, Mississippi with my guy Jake Wimberly. He has a syndicated show. Great guy. Great college football mind. Very lucky to be on a show like that one. So, you know, it was fascinating when he asked me about the entire SEC because he has me on there as, you know, an LSU guy, but there's also the entire SEC that I cover on Power Hour SEC. The thing that is really interesting when you take a look at LSU's schedule this next year is that you do have quite a few teams that are with first-year head coaches. Kentucky, first-year head coach. Auburn, first-year head coach. Arkansas, first-year head coach. And normally that's a good thing, right? Normally in the old college football years, when you had a first-year head coach on the schedule, that's when you want to get him. We all know the story of what happened to Nick Saban in year one in Alabama. He lost to ULM. But this idea, and it's one thing I always push back on during the Brian Kelly era, when people, and we had a great first year under Brian Kelly. It was our best year. But people would bring up, hey, this is only Brian Kelly's first year. Y'all, I don't have the patience for that argument anymore. Not with the transfer portal being the way that it is now. If I am spending big dollar to get you to my school and I give you a good budget to build a staff, guess what? You are expected to deliver. So you take a look at a bunch of these first-year head coaches. Arkansas is another school that has a first-year head coach. And we mentioned that. But now I am scared to play teams with first-year head coaches. Petrified. Because you can flip a roster so quickly now. You can bring your own guys. Remember, back then, you can only sign 25 total people. Transfers, high school players. 25 total. Now it's unlimited. And the rosters are going to get bigger. So two things about that. Your general manager becomes that much more important. And then the second thing is your expectations and getting things going in year one goes up. Now, I will defend someone like a Ryan Silverfield because the athletic director situation at Arkansas is not great. Be very lucky that you have Virg Ausberry, someone that is willing to die for the LSU brand. That's how much Virg loves LSU. There's not a lot of athletic directors that love their school more than he does. And I understand not everybody's a Verge guy. But I know this is his dream job. He's not leaving to take any other job. There are other ADs in the SEC that aren't as popular. So I'm here to tell you right now that I'm giving Arkansas a little bit of a pass in his first year. Because their assistants are getting poached left and right. which kind of leads me into my next topic before we get to all your comments. Now, the cool thing about off-season streams is that, of course, our audience isn't going to be as big as during the season, where there's a lot more people in here. But it does become a little bit more intimate. I take as many comments as we possibly can, and I'm able to experiment with different arguments and all of that. And this is one that I really do believe you have to start asking big questions about if Lane Kiffin is truly the most convincing coach we have ever seen. So, as a lot of you know, the Jake Olson thing happened. Jake Olson was recruited by the Washington Commanders to join their coaching staff under Durante Jones. And it's funny because my big tweet today regarded Jaden Daniels, and that Jaden Daniels, I'm just sharing this, his three playoff games were better than any playoff game from Caleb Williams and Drake May. I know that's the most biased thing. I would die for Jaden Daniels, but it's just true. But anyway, that's a side story. The Commanders, though, wanted Jake Olson. And all the national insiders are saying Jake Olson to the Commanders. He doesn't take the job. He's staying at LSU. But that would be, you know, something that you would just kind of brush off. You know, Jake Olson has a great relationship with Blake Baker. It makes sense. Jake Olson owes a lot of his success to Blake Baker. But what about Blake Baker? Blake Baker was pursued by the two best group of five jobs in the country. He was pursued by Memphis, and he was pursued by Tulane. Now, we can get into semantics if those are the two best group of five jobs, but I think many would say they're no less than the top five. And Blake Baker, as a lot of you know, is big-time head coach material. He lights up a room. He relates with the players. He wears cleats at practice. You mic him up. It is a joy to watch him do what he does best. And he loves his players. Damon Clark to Whit Weeks to whoever you want to mention. I have friends that have lived in Ruston a very long time when Blake Baker was with the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. They still love Blake. But what happened? What happened to Blake Baker? Oh, yeah. He stayed at LSU. This is insane. How many more things are you going to see Lane Kiffin do that truly blows your mind when it comes to retention? It's insane. Caden Durham in the transfer portal. Caden Durham would be the RB1 at quite a few SEC schools. If Caden Durham wanted to go to Arkansas, they would pay up. Caden Durham, who had heavy Oklahoma ties, if he wanted to go there, he'd get a good lion's share of the carries next to John Mateer. Lane says, not so fast. We want you here. And I understand that he didn't get and he didn't land every player back with LSU. But no one thought Caden Durham was staying. Nobody. And the list of all these guys that Lane convinces to stay with the program is insane. And obviously the biggest of this entire cycle was Charlie Weiss. Now I understand Charlie is making a ridiculous sum of money to be the offensive coordinator at LSU. He's the highest paid OC in the SEC. And him and Lane are tight. But Charlie Weiss had a legit opportunity to go to the NFL with a defensive special teams minded head coach, which means you are given more autonomy than normal to coach a team with a quarterback you have already worked with in the past in Jackson Dart. Charlie said no. Philadelphia Eagles, who just won a Super Bowl, who just got a coach, a head coaching position for the biggest team in New Orleans, the New Orleans Saints. Charlie says no. You know, Lane Kiffin is special. He is so unfreaking believably special. And this isn't just me glazing the man that is the head coach of my current team. Because anybody that has been rocking with me for a very long time knows how big of a Lane guy I am. Going back to 2021, you can go back. I did a video while I was high. True story. Go see it for yourself. Where Lane Kiffin was my number one candidate behind Lincoln Riley. They were 1A, 1B. And by the way, I was high because I just had a dental procedure. But you can go back. That was my final head coaching search order. And I said, hey, this is what I would pay. This is what I would do for Lane Kiffin to be my coach. I get a lot of stuff wrong on here. But one thing I got right was that this should have been the move all along. And you're seeing it now. What does he do? Well, obviously, these coaches are getting paid well. Money is very important. But the overarching thing in college sports that everyone has pointed to is, well, all college coaches are looking for an out to go to the NFL, where you have easier hours in theory. You don't have to recruit teenagers and so on and so on and so on. But Lane has kept so many coaches from actually going to the NFL. Now, obviously, with Jake, it wasn't just Lane. Blake plays a role in all of this. I get that. But it is ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. How many more times does Lane Kiffin have to show you that this guy is truly a special, special, special coach? And I've kept my mouth shut mostly on the Jake Olsen thing because, you know, him going to the Commanders, I don't know if Jake looked at that as a sinking ship. Because right now, I don't know how I feel about that Commanders coaching staff. And you guys know how personal I could be about Jaden Daniels. And it's gotten even crazier because I do Commanders breakdowns on my NFL channel. So I'm really invested. My family lives in D.C. I used to live in D.C. Shout out Silver Spring. That's obviously in Maryland. That's where I went to church, but it's right outside of D.C. So I'm really hoping for the best with Jaden. But I also think Jake Olsen said, look, I think this staff is going to do really big mother effing things. So there you go. Now, I want to get to all your comments here. We say hi to Keith. Let's go. Oh, no, he didn't get to me. I want him to have strong stances, LA Mom, against my team. I don't think it's good that everybody says, hey, I truly, truly do think Lane Kiffin is the best thing since sliced bread. Let's see here. Let's go to Becoming Tyrant. Texas overhyped every year. Do you think Sark will be on the hot seat if he doesn't win at all this year? No, Sark is pretty safe. The only thing that's interesting with Sark is they do not want Steve Sarkisian calling plays. And by they, I mean some folks at Texas. They simply do not think he can handle the load. All right, so this gets kind of strange when you start talking about who actually is calling plays and not calling plays. It's like Lane doesn't call the plays. Charlie does. Lane is very involved. It's collaborative. They're really good at game planning. Sark, to me, at his peak, is the best play caller in the SEC. I do. I do think so. I think him and Lane are close, though. But Lane isn't technically a play caller. So it's really Lane, Charlie, and George and the whole thing. But, you know, I think for me, with Steve, he got very lucky last year. I don't think that Texas team was really all that good. They really had a bunch of close game luck fall in their favor. And this is one of the downsides of going to a 16-team college football playoff, that Texas would have gotten in when I don't think they should have gotten in. And my harshest take from last year was, even though Texas beat Vanderbilt on their home turf, as in the game was in Austin, I still would have put Vanderbilt in the field over Texas. It would have been close, though. Would have been very close. But, yeah, I still think Steve Sarkisian is an elite coach. You just can't make the college football playoff semis and back-to-back seasons, and then, at the same time, you barely miss out on the playoff last year. And let's just say the season blows up. I think he's still the guy for the job. I think he's pretty safe. I will say, though, as far as Sark is concerned, man, this was a bold decision to change a defensive coordinator who's mostly been good. Pegasus says he's leaning Texas. But as of this point, obviously LSU has already started some workouts and so on and so on. Man, the vibes at LSU are vibing. Dude, they are vibing. It's going to be crazy. Now, I do want to just briefly touch on LSU baseball. Obviously, I don't do as much LSU baseball. There's plenty of other great LSU baseball accounts. This team is fun, though. This team is so unfreaking believably fun. And I know I go on this diatribe quite a bit, but I do think, and I saw Chris Phillips tweet this out as well. He does a lot of good baseball stuff at SEC Unfiltered. And he's been a guest on here, I think, a couple times now. Man, college baseball just feels really pure. It really does. You don't have a lot of the minutiae and a lot of the chatter regarding, well, there is no commissioner and the leagues are crazy and the playoffs not right. It seems as if college baseball has an identity. It seems as if college baseball has its you-know-what figured out. And I love that. And there was another viral tweet that I retweeted today. I do think college baseball is going to keep getting bigger. I do. Obviously, the sport itself is just not as popular as football or basketball or internationally as soccer, but it's still obviously unfreaking believably popular. The major league game has not had better ratings. Obviously, a lot of that is Ohtani and the Dodgers being good, but the major league baseball has gotten better. The games move faster. Paul Skeens was the most viral thing on Twitter. Pitching Ninja did an overlay of one of his best pitches, and it was actually an overlay of four different pitches. And it had CC Sabathia talking. It had Roger Clemens talking. There's people saying Paul Skeens might be the best pitcher of all time. Baseball's in a good spot right now. And the college game is really good. All right. It helps that the best player in MLB is obviously, it's obviously Ohtani, but the best pure pitcher is Skeens, and he was a college player. And, you know, dates a celebrity who's also an LSU grad. It's good for the sport. I am really high on college baseball, and I am really, really high on LSU being a big-time brand. You know, you had this viral tweet go out today that Bryce Harper said if he was going to go play college baseball, he would have played at LSU. Could you imagine? Bryce Harper? Could you imagine that? Like, if he came here, he would have been the best player to ever play here, more than likely, if he would have played all three seasons. So think about Dylan Cruz and the season and then the career that he had. That would have been Bryce Harper and then some, because, you know, Bryce Harper was on the cover. What was he? I think he was on the cover of SI. Maybe he would have gone to college with NIL and all of that, but, you know, he would have gone pro as a transcendent player. And, you know, I just think college baseball is in a really good spot. And by the way, that wasn't a shot at Dylan Cruz at all. He's a GOAT, but you get the point. Now, what's going to be interesting is what can college baseball do to get even bigger? And honestly, nothing. I really do like it the way it is now. But as far as LSU specifically, Jake Brown, as LA Mom has pointed out, just keeps knocking the baseball out of the ballpark. I thought the motorboat celebration was great. I thought it was ironic. Ben McDonald said, man, Jake Brown, that's hot. And he was talking about, obviously, his form, not necessarily him boating another LSU player. And if you don't know what a motorboat is, well, use your imagination. But this team seems like it's a lot of fun. And I understand, like, Chris Stanfield is a little banged up right now. But, God, this team is elite. You got Dardar. You got York. Holding it down for my fellow thick boys. But, yes, this team looks to be pretty good. We won't know anything until SEC happens. That's when the bullets really start flying. But they're at the very least a fun team. What about the pitching, though? So we have a Patreon. We have some baseball experts in there. Sam and D really are two really sharp college baseball folks in there. You can ask LA Mom, who's in the chat. Those two guys really carry our baseball conversation in our Patreon. And by the way, if you sign up for Patreon from this stream, I will cover your first 2 months. You get your first 2 months free. You get to be in the Discord. I understand, like, the pitching could be sharper. But, you know, when you lose Ianson, you lose Anderson, you're going to, you know, try to find your spikes on the mound, obviously. So, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I am Yeski here. But I think they'll figure it out. And honestly, if we can't pitch well, at least we're going to be in some exciting games. Bet the over in every LSU baseball game is basically what I'm saying. But you know what's interesting about a guy like Jake Brown is, like, it doesn't seem like he would be the best player on this team. And obviously, I think Curiel has the highest upside of the players that play on the field. But Sam said it, and the reason why I'm shouting out the Discord is Sam said this before the season actually began, that he thought Jake Brown was the best player on this team. Like, before a pitch even happened. And I was like, you sure about that? It's either Curiel or Monster. But he's been right up to this point. So shout out to you, Jake Brown. Now, I got some really nice comments after the fact about our deep dive into LSU women's basketball on Sunday night. And, you know, I have someone that studies my trends. And he said, Carter, just stick with football. No one cares about women's basketball. And to that, I said, hell no. I love women's basketball so much. I really, really, really do at the collegiate level. I've really sunk my teeth into the sport. I've called women's basketball games down for 6 years. I call college men's games as well. And look, I understand we don't play the most aesthetically pleasing form of basketball, but no one really does. No one does. Women's basketball, especially in March, is grinded out fist fights. And a lot of that comes down to the eyes of the beholder. And some of that is the viewer. But more importantly, it's the officials. The officials in women's basketball, it is a harder sport to officiate, in my opinion. But they're not as good as the men's. So, you know, so much of these games come down to whistles, which is why I think your free throw shooting in these big games matter. So I got a few nice comments after the fact about, you know, how deep we dove into what the stats said to me about LSU women's basketball in close games. And this is just a Cliff Notes version. I highly recommend you go back and watch a stream from Sunday where it's just me talking about this. In games decided by 10 points or less, over the last 3 years, LSU is 14-14. I will repeat, in games decided by 10 points or less, we are 14-14. And what I did was I compared it to all the other elite programs. Here's a chart. They have been better in close games than we have. Now, some of that is small sample size and bias, or small sample size bias. In 2022, though, when we won the whole thing, we were 8-1 in these games. Since then, we are 14-14. Now, once again, you see all the other scores. You see all the other records. Some of that is positive regression incoming for LSU. I didn't say that smoothly at all. Basically, we're going to start winning more of these close games just by happenstance. But, you know, for me, you look at some of the things that do decide these close games. So many of those games, we were under 70% from the free throw line. So many of these close games we had, in these close losses in particular, we had a guard have a rancid night shooting. And I mean rancid. P.U. Stinky, terrible night shooting. 0 for 10s, 1 for 10s, 0 for 7s. The list goes on and on. And in particular, if that player plays more than 20 minutes in that game, which is more than half, that means that those shots are that much more valuable. But, you know, you've got to be more consistent in these close game scenarios. So I'm not going to go too deep into that. I'm not worried about LSU women's basketball. I don't think anybody thought going into the year that we were going to win at all. If we would have landed Sarah Strong, I think a lot of us would have, we would be probably one or two loss. I think if we landed Sarah Strong, we probably beat South Carolina. But there you go. Now, we've not been at 77. We're actually, I believe we're up. I just haven't changed it yet. I have to go in and manually change this, and it takes a little while. But actually, what I'll do is I'll go look in the break. I'll see if we actually lost. Coming up after this, we'll go into everybody's favorite segment here on PH.
Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LaborDTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LaborDTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LaborDTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their five locations all throughout the Lafayette region. Are you a diehard LSU fan? And would you like to understand the complex game of football better? Well, sign up today for our PHL Patreon. This is his second touchdown. Counter GY, you're pulling the guard. We dive deep on recruiting and the transfer portal at a level that you have never seen before. Film breakdowns from so many different angles. And my personal favorites, oh yeah, the analytics, baby. I like to get nerdy. We take a look at cutting edge statistics that help all of us understand LSU football even better. And guess what? Every new signup gets a Joe Burrow card in the mail for free. But we gotta save the best for last. Our private Discord community of LSU fans from around the globe. Sign up today, patreon.com/LSU football, and put your name on our wall of patrons. Special thanks to everybody who's on here. Let's freaking go.
All righty. So we are actually still at 77. So there you go. Actually, I wasn't able to look. My wife called me. I haven't gotten an alert to say that we've gotten any more, but let's see if we can get this number. I think we're going to get three more members by the end of this chat. I do think so. We say hi to you, Smitty. What's up, man? You haven't missed anything, buddy. What did Lane Kiffin tweet today? Lane is on vacay. This is truly the deadest college football period. Lane and Cookie catching some fish. Lane tagged LSU football on this. I got a water slide. I'm not really much of a water guy. I'm not a beach guy.
Like, what do you think we'll be like when we're older?
My uncle.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Like, what do you think like our jobs will be when we're older?
I'll be a head football coach and take you on vacations.
I like that.
He said, "I'm gonna take you on vacations," and he's gonna be a head football coach. Lane Kiffin replying to an Ole Miss fan, we can all agree losing Cookie was a true net negative about losing Lane Kiffin. And Lane said, I would feel the same. And there you go, some more Mardi Gras action. So Lane not as active on the Twitters. We say hi to Ramon. What's up? Holding it down, the Cuevas. Is JB Joe Burrow? Is it John Butler? Is it Jordan Belfort? Shout out McConaughey. That was what my wife told me a few weeks ago. She said, I'd say a few weeks ago. So not this Thursday, but the Thursday before. I went to Austin for the LSU women's basketball game. Long trip, didn't come home from the win, and it sucked. But all my wife said, did you meet McConaughey? Did I meet Matthew McConaughey? I'm like, no, you're not going to ask me if I had a good time? All right. So one thing I do want to ask is I kind of been going back and forth because I don't like updating this graphic all too much. I miss my old backdrop. Like I have a Monster Milam autograph photo, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning kind of over in the corner over here. There's a Monster Milam. And you can see Peyton, Eli, Archie. And then I have this huge Jaden Daniels mural with Malik and BTJ. I kind of want to bring back my old backdrop. I know some of you like the green screen, but it's the off season. I kind of want to bring back like the purple lit up natural backdrop because I don't know if you guys didn't know this, but I'm not doing this show from a helicopter above Tiger Stadium. I wish I could. That'd be pretty amazing. I'm actually holding, this kind of looks like what they hold, what the copter pilots hold or have on their headset. It looks like that. So LA Mom wants it back. We'll bring it back. Why not? So Jake the Rake Brown. Isn't it crazy, though, how many great JBs there have been? Because I honestly thought you were talking about Joe Burrow, which is fine. But yeah, I love me some Jake Brown. I love some mustache. I love Who doesn't love a good motorboat celebration? Huh? 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 601 Hattiesburg. That's where I actually did the radio show today. Was a show in Hattiesburg. Good to see you, Omar. Shout out once again to Jake Wimberly. Now, here's what we're going to do. In the next 5 to 10, I'm going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep this party moving. You know, I thought this was interesting. Pretty national guy by the name of David Pollack was on a show earlier with Greg McElroy. David Pollack called out by name Jordan Seaton. And he said, hey, and his overarching point was talking about offensive line play. And that offensive line play is not as good as it once was. Offensive line development isn't as good as it once was. People aren't moving people, so on and so on. This, that, and the third. Whatever. Newsflash. Offensive line play has never really been all that great. And the truth is, it's simple math and physics. Offensive line, you've got to have five good ones and then at least two backups. And there's not many people walking around that is 290 and above that could move and do the things an offensive lineman is asked to do. We can just see it in the transfer portal. All right, we have seen this all play out. So that would be my first thing to David Pollack to rebuttal what he had to say about offensive line play. And he said that, like, run blocking, he was calling out Jordan Seaton's run blocking. And to that, I actually agree with. This was my exact report. You can go listen to the gazillion film studies that Jordan Seaton, that we did on Jordan Seaton. And I said, he's not the nastiest guy. You're not going to confuse him with a run-blocking force, like a Quentin Nelson, if you will. Now, it's not the same position, but you get the point. But that doesn't mean he's not great. You know, the PFF grades kind of bear that out as well. Seaton, an elite pass blocker, not a great run blocker. And I wouldn't go so far as saying he's not a great run blocker. I would say it's not his specialty. And that's okay. That is perfectly fine with me. Because I do think with this scheme that Lane runs, he makes run blocking easier on his offensive linemen by calling plays that mathematically put them in better positions. And by that, I mean counting the box. It's a lot of RPO and just good play call sequencing. If you are a YouTube member or if you are a Patreon, I show specifically Lane doing this versus the best defensive player in this recent Super Bowl, Nick Emanwori. And in our latest, and I should have done more on how Lane went up against Nick a few years ago. Like, Emanwori is amazing in the NFL, amazing force. And he was great. He's always played well against us. And for those who don't know, he had the pick six that was called back for the Garrett Nussmeier blindside. That's who that is. Ended up having one of the best rookie seasons we've ever seen from a defensive back. So we're looking at a pretty big-time player. And in the film study, it was an Ole Miss versus South Carolina game a few years ago. I show you how Lane sequences and how, and it's Lane and Charlie and George and the whole operation, and how that makes life easier on your offensive line. So, to David, yeah, of course, we would like Jordan Seaton to be nasty. I don't think that was the worst criticism. But I do think, you know, it's kind of gotten to the point where everyone's kind of just stating the obvious now, that offensive line play is not great. So how do you fix that? Well, number one, a lot of it is scouting. A lot of it is scouting. And then number two, a lot of it is just play calling. Honestly. Sure, there are some truly elite offensive linemen out there. And truly elite offensive lines. Indiana had one of the best in college football history. Vanderbilt is very creative with a strong side, weak side system where they don't have right guard, right tackle, left tackle. They move things around based on the play call. So there you go. Oh, King, they're not letting you gift the memberships. That's okay, man. That's okay. Just as long as you're here. What game is the backdrop? I don't know. King M likes this backdrop better. And by the way, this isn't a knock on David Pollock. I want him to have strong takes. This was interesting. A state audit of the LSU system shows the university's financial situation improved by hundreds of millions of dollars despite a drop in tuition revenue. And William Tate said, "You are welcome." President Tate, man, did some good things. Now, do I like President Roos? Yeah. Yeah. But I'm telling you, man, William Tate loved LSU sports. And just as important as that, his wife loved it. His wife did a lot of things for LSU women's basketball. Okay. Now, I do think Lane was really good at Alabama. But Steve Sarkisian at Alabama, holy moly, he was so good. Like, we don't need to. I think if Lane was sitting right here, he would be like, I was good. Sark was just as good as I was. Like, Steve Sarkisian was ridiculous. Now, he had great players. Mac Jones is amazing. Let's see, is there anything else I wanted to get to before we skedaddle? It is, you want the natural background? All right, we'll bring it back for the next live. It's just so much extra work to do the green screen. It really is. You know, like, I don't like having to redo the backdrop every time. But I do like the members being on there. I want to get to 100 members. I think we can get there. So tomorrow, LSU baseball will hit the diamond. They will play Nichols at 1 p.m. Central. So we will do a live stream tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Central. And look, this Nichols game means a lot to me. And that's all I got to say. I got to call this game in Alec Box 2 years ago. And that was literally one of the best moments of my life. It really was. Calling a game in Alec Box Stadium. Let's go to Quavis. I do agree, and I really do mean this, that this is by far LSU's best staff since 2019. And this is easily their best offensive staff. Easily. And obviously Joe Brady is now an NFL head coach, which is pretty damn impressive. And then, of course, we know what Steven Spurrier was to the program. All-time great. James Craig is ironically back on this staff, which is cool. But in terms of offensive pedigree, this is the best we have ever had. The best. Let's go to Quavis. Super sticker. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Pegasus is manifesting William Wade. I'll tell you this. I would be very careful with signing over big dollar for a men's basketball coach. I really would be careful. Because when you look at the pros and the cons of what you would need to bring in to assure that LSU men's basketball gets back to where it needs to be, you better be signing a pretty big proven asset. So with William Wade, it would come down to cost. Obviously, I'm not the one signing the checks, but every year these expense reports get FOIA'd, and it's still amazing how much more football makes than all the other sports. But keep in mind, there's other coaches that are having their seats warmed up. There's a lot of you that want Beth Tarina out. She's not been good. This is starting my take as far as defending Beth Tarina is getting colder by the day. But for me, I truly do believe that LSU can hire a non-big name and get back on the right track when it comes to men's basketball. But the one thing I simply do not want is another big buyout. All right, if you're signing someone over with an absolutely positively ginormous buyout, then it better be Jay Wright. Because I'm telling you right now, I had one college insider on the basketball side of things bring up how disastrous the Jerome Tang situation has been. So we'll see. You know, one thing that could get LSU to hire another mid-major type of coach is that some of these types of coaches have worked. Todd Golden just won an Natty. Bucky at Texas A&M has done some really good things this year. So, you know, most of the SEC is comprised of big-time coach, Hall of Fame level. They have proven it. That's obviously John Calipari, Rick Barnes, Bruce Pearl, which you kind of throw in there. He was a big-time proven guy before he took the Auburn job. So, you know, I don't know. I'm spending an uncomfortable amount of time thinking about what I need to do to help men's basketball get back on the right track. Terrence, I wish I could put your comment up, but you said a bad word. I don't quite say that about men's basketball because I just want to make the tournament. And that's all I'm asking for. You know, to use a quote of famous philosopher Brian Kelly, I don't want to be spoiled. We're so great at women's basketball. We're the best baseball program. We have the most positive vibes as far as football is concerned. We're good in softball. We're good in gymnastics, which my 100-year-old grandmother loves. If you're listening to this, Jay Clark, my 100-year-old grandmother that lives in New Roads, Pointe-Coupee Parish, she loves your team more than anyone else. I'm telling you right now, I don't want to be spoiled. I'm not asking us to go win a natty. Natty is not the standard for men's basketball. Hell, at this point, hire John Brady. Bring John Brady back. Let's go to Pegasus. Look at how quick it changed for the women when Kim showed up. Sure. Sure. But it made sense. Kim from Louisiana wanted to get out of Baylor. Yeah, you're right. And obviously his relationship with Will is interesting. So Lee Mallett is now the new board of supervisors. He takes over for Scott Ballard. Jordan says we're at the same John Brady camp. Well, that means I crossed you up, man. Bring back Dale Brown. You want Shaq to sign a big NIL check? Bring back Dale Brown. All right, y'all. That'll do it for me. We'll be live again tomorrow at 6 p.m. Central. You know, if you missed it earlier, I'd go back and listen to the rant. LSU is my number 3 rated power team in my power rankings. I'll have my full rankings released on Thursday. And, you know, for me, I just don't think the Jake Olsen story is getting enough run. Not necessarily because of his individual decision, but the overarching decision that all these coaches that had big time jobs wanting them have said no. All of them. It's crazy. Almost all of them. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Tonight. We are doing, I'm doing like a meatball Euro wrap. Let's go.